Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Music Talk Show, the destination for research communication by early career researchers on Radio Nova. My name is Kristina Sučanski, and I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Oslo's Musicology Department. Today's episode is another holiday special, and we'll be talking about music and Easter, with a special focus on Eastern Easter. And I will also be talking about my research on contemporary music and spirituality at the university. So, since this is a holiday special, I thought I could begin with telling you about the Easter celebration in Serbia, where I am originally from. Although I have lived in Norway since I was 11. And the two celebrations vary slightly, and I have some Easter memories from my childhood that I would like to share, and also tell you what the Easter celebration typically looks like in my family. So, my most cherished Easter tradition is the boiling and coloring of Easter eggs on Good Friday. I remember my grandmother using onion skins to achieve the traditional red, brownish color of the eggs and decorating them with flowers. And I still use this method sometimes when I have enough time, even though there are more modern ways to color the eggs today. And the most important ritual associated with Easter in Serbia is coloring the first egg in red. This egg is known as Čuvar kuća, or the guardian of the house, and it remains in the household until the following year's Easter, and it is believed to provide protection against illness and harm. So the remaining colorful eggs find their place in baskets or bowls at the center of the table. And this is perhaps the most important aspect of the Easter celebration for me. But then there is another tradition that particularly children like, and it is the egg smashing tradition. So competing whose egg is the strongest. On Easter morning, everyone picks a favorite egg from the basket and compares its strength by hitting one egg against the other. So the surviving egg is the champion, and the loser egg or eggs are to be eaten. And the rule is that the first food eaten after Lent is an Easter egg. So the egg competitions usually happen before the Easter lunch, and then before nearly each meal in the following days, depending on how many eggs you have colored. So I remember eating eggs for weeks sometimes after Easter day. And this is always a loud event, full of laughter. Of course, sometimes you do get tired of eating eggs every day. But yes, children really enjoy this tradition. And other than that, people visit their families, friends, neighbors. They carry the colorful eggs as gifts. And apart from breaking eggs, the Orthodox Easter is very much about family and friends getting together. And in the spirit of Easter, whether one observes the holiday with the strict religious devotion or embraces it from a more cultural standpoint, the idea is to try to set aside any misunderstandings from the past year and to move forward. And it is a time for renewal, reflection, and most importantly for reconnecting with the loved ones. So, now let's listen to some music. I have selected a chant from the 13th century, The Sorrowful Mother. It's a hymn sang in both Catholic and Orthodox churches, a hymn for Lent, and here it is sung in Ukrainian by the Voidubitsky Church Choir. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Welcome back to the Music Talk Show on Radio Nova. I'm Kristina, a PhD candidate at University of Oslo's Department of Musicology, and today we're talking about some traditions of Eastern Easter, and I will soon be telling you about my research at the university. But first, I wanted to tell you a little more about the Christian Orthodox Easter. So have you ever wondered why some countries celebrate it based on a different calendar and later than the rest of the Christian world? And what is the difference between Easter and Orthodox Easter? So, both holidays celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ, but the traditions vary slightly and are based on different calendars. Orthodox Christians celebrate Easter later than most Christians in the Western world because the churches calculate the holiday by different calendars. So, for example, the churches in Serbia and North Macedonia follow the old Julian calendar. And this calendar was established by Julius Caesar in year 45 BC, and it is based on the solar cycle. So Easter typically falls between April 4th and May 8th, and it is determined by the first full moon after Passover. So this timing aligns with the New Testament narratives, as the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ occurred after his entry into Jerusalem for Passover. And on the other hand, Easter in the Western world follows the Gregorian calendar. There is an interesting fact about the two calendars. The Gregorian calendar was introduced by Pope Gregory XIII in 1582 with added leap years to adjust for an 11-minute discrepancy that caused seasons to become out of sync. So under the Gregorian calendar, churches established Easter to be held on the first Sunday after the full moon that occurs or after the spring equinox. Now, there is also something called the revised Julian calendar that has been adopted by churches in Bulgaria, Romania, Ukraine and several other countries. And the revised Julian calendar has the same months and month lengths as the old Julian and Gregorian calendar, but with some adjustments to the leap years. And it is actually one of the most accurate calendar systems ever developed. It reflects the length of the time Earth takes to complete a full orbit around the Sun, with an error of only 2 seconds per year. So, yes, the secret to its accuracy lies in the way it calculates leap years. So years that are evenly divisible by 4 are leap years, but there are exceptions. Years that are also evenly divisible by 100, and the remainder is neither 200 nor 600 when divided by 900 are not leap years. I hope that makes sense. So other calendar systems are much less accurate, and the Gregorian calendar we use today has an error of 27 seconds per year, I've learned. So the Julian calendars are not used by any nation as an official calendar, and instead all of the Eastern Orthodox nations follow the Gregorian calendar as the official state calendar. But the churches in some Orthodox countries still follow what we call the old calendar. And for some people, like me, this results in multiple celebrations each year. And living in Norway for many years and taking part in both cultures, traditions, it has really meant celebrating everything twice. So Christmas, Easter, even New Year, twice. And I feel very fortunate to be taking part in what sometimes feels like a never-ending holiday season. So now let's listen to some more music, and this is a version of a Greek Orthodox chant for the Day of Resurrection called Anastasios Imera, and it is performed by Dina Ljubojevic and Melody. Welcome back to the music talk show of University of Oslo's Musicology Department. I'm Christina, a PhD candidate at the Department of Musicology, and today in our holiday special episode we are talking about Easter, music and spirituality. So now, since I love talking about my research and all my struggles with it, I would like to tell you a bit about this complex topic that I'm looking into, music and spirituality. So in my research project I investigate the relationship between contemporary music and spirituality. And I look at classical music, which intersects with spirituality, modernism, and tradition. I explore how music written in our time might accommodate or invoke the possibility of a spiritual experience. And here I use close readings, archival research, I investigate the role of the performer and the listening experience, and I also rely on my background as a classical pianist. And currently I'm exploring the limitations of some conceptions of spirituality in our society. And I'm engaging with how music can express what is absent in verbal reasoning and conceptual understanding. So I'm investigating how music encourages thinking related to spirituality that is difficult to articulate using language. And I'm trying to understand how we can access this domain, which resists definition and explanation, and understand ideas of spirituality that can be connected to music and the musical experience. And here, my intention is not to define spirituality or to fully explain it, but to open up a space to discuss spiritual experiences and how they operate through musical and personal agency. So just like other early career researchers, I'm often asked, how did I come up with this idea and why contemporary music and spirituality? And this is really something that has been interesting me for a long time. And contemporary music has been my primary choice of repertoire in the past decade as a performer. Although I do love all kinds of repertoire, and I'm a huge Brahms fan. People who have known me for a long time would know that. But for this research project, it felt natural to want to investigate contemporary music more closely, because it is the direction that my journey has taken recently. So, yes, I have many times wondered what happens in moments when you're on stage performing, or the other way around, you're in the audience and listening. And you feel like every single person is that room is in that room is fully immersed into the music and listening very intensely, and you almost feel like time has stopped, and you cannot explain why, but suddenly you feel like nothing matters more than this very moment, and everything almost it's almost like your entire existence suddenly just makes sense. Although you cannot really explain why and how you know that, but that is how you feel. And to me, that can be called a spiritual experience. And I wanted to know more about this phenomenon. And then I searched for a way in. And I did some research, and I realized that this topic has really been of great interest for scholars in the past decades. And many have recognized the unity of music and spirituality as something that can enrich human living in many ways. And this has been discussed in musicology, also in psychology and music therapy. However, I also cannot help the feeling that the notion of spirituality has become something that is fixed and easy to measure nowadays, and that it feels exhausted and reduced in some way. And sometimes it seems like everything can easily be named spiritual. So if we want to feel more spiritual, no problem, we can go on Spotify and put on a playlist named Spiritual Music, and there it is. Or we can create a spiritual morning routine, or even a spiritual makeup routine. And sometimes I wonder, is it really that simple? And does this really affect us in any way? So this is what drives my research, the wish to develop further some current ideas of both music and spirituality. By critically analyzing some common narratives that have influenced our understanding of both. And I hope to challenge, reconsider, and potentially reframe some of these narratives while offering different perspectives on seemingly established notions and concepts. And now, since I've been talking for some time, let's listen to more music. Here's a piece that is very often discussed in a spiritual context. We'll be listening to Cantus in Memoriam Benjamin Britten by Arvo Pärt, performed by the Norwegian Chamber Orchestra. So you could probably guess from the previous music example that I'm looking into the compositional approach of Arvo Pärt as a part of my research project. And I thought I could tell you more about that and what else I'm investigating and how it is all related to my ideas of spirituality. So let me begin with saying that my research is centered around music written by two specific composers, Arvo Pärt and Ljubica Marić. However, an exploration of the relationship between music and spirituality could consist of various musical expressions conveying a sense of the spiritual, with countless styles and genres associated with different kinds of musical traditions, and definitely not only the Western musical tradition. And also, even though we started this talk show with discussing Easter traditions and religious spiritual ideas, since this is a holiday special, now that we have moved on to my research project, I must say that it has been very important for me to try to not define spirituality and to approach it as an open space that can be accessed through music, regardless of faith and background, by any perceptive listener. So I have decided to center my research around Ljubica Marić and Arvo Pärt, who at first at least seem to come from the same musical tradition. And considering that there is so much music that could be associated with the notion of spirituality, this might seem like a limitation, but it was a deliberate choice. Because although they in some way operate from the same base, they both use elements of ancient chant and material originating from the domain of institutional religion as their creative base. Their approach to spirituality is fundamentally different. So Arvo Pärt finds inspiration in Orthodox Christianity and has always been open about his faith as a source of inspiration. But Ljubica Marić, on the other hand, her view of spirituality seems to come from cultural influences and the perspective of an agnostic. So Marić draws from the Serbian Oktoekos, which is, although the music of the Serbian Orthodox Church, it is also a musical tradition rooted in folk music, despite its origins in Byzantine chant. So I will explain this more closely soon. But it is important to say that the difference in their approaches is very interesting to me and to my research, because it highlights a key difference in the approach to spirituality in our time. So Pärt spirituality seems to be synonymous with religion and is closely linked to his faith, while Marić's approach could be seen to represent the cultural notion of being spiritual but not religious. So my goal is to explore how they, despite sharing a similar musical foundation, embody distinct approaches to both music and spirituality. And by examining their music, I hope to challenge some common narratives and to shed light on the limitations of categorization. So rather than fitting their music into predefined boxes, I hope to encourage diverse interpretations and experiences, and to deepen our understanding of both spirituality and music. So first, let's listen to a piece by Arvo Pärt. Here's a composition that is often seen under very specific terms, and then I will try to explain why I have a different view. And this is a live recording from a performance that I did related to this project, and this is a piece called Für Alina by Arvo Pärt. Welcome back to the Music Talk Show on Radio Nova. I'm Kristina, PhD candidate from the Department of Musicology, and we are talking about contemporary music and spirituality. Now, I would like to tell you more about the compositional approach of Arvo Pärt and the way it is sometimes categorized and understood in a specific way, and why I would like to open up for some different perspectives. So, in modern scholarship, the compositional approach of Arvo Pärt seems to be firmly grounded in the domain of postmodernism and often minimalism. and it is commonly associated with notions of spirituality and simplicity. And we often hear terms like holy minimalism and new simplicity when it comes to his music. And this alleged simplicity of Pärt's music is often understood in terms of reductiveness of material and simplicity of musical form, which are all features that are in our society often seen as closely related to ideas of spirituality and introspectiveness. And I say alleged simplicity because I think that the way a musical score looks and can be experienced are entirely different things. I think that absence of notated material is not synonymous with incomplexity of expression. On the contrary, the musical experience can open up a whole world of memories, emotions, thoughts, sensations that are manifested through our bodies. And I believe that it is not only compositional content that determines how music is understood and experienced. And also, although the score of Für Alina consists of only 15 measures of music, and at first sight it seems like something a pianist on beginner level could play or sight read, it is actually not that simple. At least if we consider aspects of music performance that reach beyond complexity of the musical score and technical demands in terms of speed and volume. So actually the pianist needs to make many choices regarding articulation and pedaling to achieve a desired interplay between tension and release of the two voices that we hear and the acoustics, and also to adjust the sensory contact with the keys to create a characteristic sonic quality with as many overtones as possible. So how do we do this? Well, a lot of it happens during the performance and instinctively, but it is really not a simple task. So we could say that Für Alina contains a complex network of interrelated sonic choices and possibilities, which question and resist the simplicity narrative that has over the years become its defining element. Now, I believe that many of our listeners are familiar with Arvo Pärt's compositions, but have probably not heard of Ljubica Marić. And at first, when I talk about my research and say that she used elements of Byzantine chant in her compositions, most people assume that she was a very religious person and wrote from the perspective of personal faith. But actually, as I already mentioned, her view of spirituality seems to come from cultural influences and the aspect of folk music in the Octoechos. And I will soon tell you more about that and about the Octoechos. But first, let's listen to a piece called The Byzantine Concerto by Ljubica Marić. It is one of my favorite piano concertos. And here it is performed by Olga Jovanović, piano, and Belgrade Philharmonic Orchestra, and conducted by Oscar Danon. For all of those joining us, this is the Music Talk Show. I'm a PhD candidate, Kristina, from the University of Oslo's Musicology Department. And today we are talking about Easter, music and spirituality. We have just listened to the Byzantine Concerto by Ljubica Marić. And to me, there is something about this music that feels like it takes me back to my roots, although it is difficult to explain exactly why. And I have this theory that perhaps it is something in my memory that activates when I hear this reworking of chant. And in my research, I do talk about signification, so that hearing chant might awaken something that is for some people deeply engraved in their cultural memories. But with this, I don't mean that chant-like elements in music should be understood as synonymous with an immediate experience of spirituality. I think that it is more complicated than that, and that there is a process that each individual has to do through listening. So we have to do the work ourselves. Spirituality is probably not just served to us. At least that is my theory. So when it comes to the octaikos that Ljubica Marić based her works on, I would have to start from the beginning and try to explain it. Because the octaikos is the eightfold musical system, known as the ancient system of eight modes. And in a modified form, it is regarded as the foundation of the tradition of monodic chant in the Byzantine Rite. So the earliest traces of the octaikos in Byzantine chant date back to the 6th century. In the Middle Ages, the system of eight echos or voices, or it is also called modes, there are four authentic and four plagal, they were used for the composition of religious chants in various churches, Byzantine, Syriac, Armenian, Georgian, Latin and Slavonic. And it still forms an essential part of worship in the Christian Orthodox liturgy. So the system differs from the scale system today broadly known as the church modes, and it can be characterized as a set of melodic formula and rhythmic patterns characteristic to each single mode, rather than a system of scales. And in the Orthodox churches, the name octaikos represents both the musical system and the liturgical book containing the weekly hymns written in each of the eight tones. So it's a little bit complicated. It stands for two things, the musical system and the book with the same name. And the hymns are organized according to the eight church tones, so that each week only one tone is used, and it is sung in cycles over the course of a church year. And this practice is subject to variations in the different Orthodox traditions, and it has during the years become removed from its Byzantine base as a result of being handed down through oral tradition. So to the question why the octaikos is rooted in culture and folklore, well, in the Serbian Orthodox chant tradition, which was essential for Ljubica Marić, the church chants were handed down mostly through oral tradition until the second half of the 19th century, due to its complicated new notation. So they lived and were taught and sung by people for years and years, and of course went through some transformation before being written down in an accessible way. So more recent church chant was written down using modern notation by Stevan Mokranjac. And he was a distinguished composer who began transcribing Serbian chant in 1897. And Mokranjac transcribed a notable collection of chants whilst teaching at the St. Sava Seminary in Belgrade himself. And this collection was published in 1908. And first of all, for instructional purposes, to meet the needs of teachers and students. So, according to Roman Aribić, Mokranjac was guided by the principle of instructiveness, and he created a fusion of folklore, church, anthology, and chant textbook, named Serbian Folk Church Singing. And it is this chant, as written by Mokranjac, that Ljubica Marić reworked and used as a base for many of her compositions. So now we could hear what this chant sounds like. So Mokranjac also wrote liturgical works as well as secular music, so-called musical rhapsodies or rukoveti, for which he used non-liturgical folk songs as a base. But now I thought we could listen to a liturgical composition by Stevan Mokranjac. It is the first statis from his cycle Passion Week. It is sung during Easter and here performed by Radio Television Belgrade Choir and conducted by Vladimir Krančević. Thank you. Welcome back to the Music Talk Show on Radio Nova. I'm Kristina from University of Oslo's Department of Musicology, and in today's episode I have talked about traditions of Eastern Easter and shared some insights from my research on contemporary music and spirituality. As we are bringing this episode to an end, I would like to thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about my research, and I hope that you have maybe learned something new today and that this show has inspired you to listen in new and different ways. Since we started this episode with music that is traditionally played around Easter, I would like to end the episode on a similar note. But since we have also talked about the cultural aspect and about folk music that is sometimes intertwined with religious traditions, I wanted to play some music from North Macedonia and also south of Serbia. And this is a traditional ring dance called Velikdansko kolo, or the Easter round dance. And here it is played on traditional instruments by Bajsa Arifovska and her ensemble. Thank you and goodbye. Now we're listening to the Easter round dance. Dance from North Macedonia and south of Serbia.